In a heated moment in Egypt, Moses blew it. He'd grown frustrated with God's timing, and so Moses tried to fast-track his own plan. The outcome was devastating. Hi, I'm Clayton Bjellin, and today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll continues a message we started on yesterday's program. Chuck is teaching from Exodus chapter 2 in the Bible, where we read about an impulsive act of Moses that would do nothing more than sabotage God's better plan. Let's pick up the study now as we find Moses reflecting on his mistakes. Chuck titled his message, Lessons Learned from Failure.
Moses, verse 15, sat down by a well. Exodus 2:15, the last few words. The lowest moment of his life. I think Moses looked into the reflection in that deep well that hot evening, and he learned four lessons from his past. Let me give them to you. We'll just sort of survey where we were last week, then we'll wrap it up with some changes that God brought about in his life. The first lesson that he learned, spiritual ends are never achieved by carnal means. Spiritual results never take place through carnal means. Where had Moses acted in the flesh? Well, look back up at verse 11. It says, in those days when Moses had grown up, he went out to his brethren and looked on their hard labors. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. And he looked this way and that way. And when he saw there was no one around, remember, he forgot to look up. He never prayed. He stepped into the scene and, in fact, he murdered that man and hid him in a fresh grave. That's the first act of the flesh. You cannot sow a carnal seed and reap a spiritual plant. You cannot sow a carnal act and reap spiritual fruit. God knows, as you know, that you manipulated and schemed and buried those carnal carcasses in the soil to get yourself promoted. So when you get there, don't give him the credit. There's another lesson he learned. He learned that timing is as important as action. Timing is just as important as action. Sometime, frankly, I think it's more important. You know that you can do the right thing at the wrong time and it'll blow up in your face? I've had that happen so many times, I'm just embarrassed to think back over it. God not only plans what we are to do, he has the right time for it. And Moses looked back and he could write over the entire experience premature. He jumped into that scene. He jumped into leadership. He pushed his way in. He forced his way and it didn't work. And he looked back and he realized, you know, I have now discovered that the timing of my act was as important as the act itself might have been. You know, I am beginning to live by a formula that is rather simple. I want to pass it on to you so that I can keep you from stumping your toe as often as I've stumped mine. Here's the formula. When God is in it, it flows. When the flesh is in it, it's forced. Think that through. If you think that in order to pull this off, you better force it through. You better back off. When God is in something, it flows. Moses was too strong. He had to discover out of weakness, one becomes strong. He had to learn that waiting was not a sign of weakness, but a sign of strength. Some of you haven't learned that. And so you're spinning your gears, working up all kinds of anxiety dust inside because that won't happen fast. I got news for you. It never will. It never will. Lesson number three that Moses learned, hiding wrong doesn't erase wrong. It only postpones its discovery. He had hid that Egyptian in the sand, verse 12. But you know what? They found that Egyptian. And they knew that he had hid him in the sand. Hiding wrong doesn't erase wrong. I am convinced from that moment on, Moses learned he would no longer hide anything. He would be transparent. He would no longer hide. You know, the most Adamic muscle in all of us is the hiding muscle. It goes all the way back to Adam and his partner in crime. After they had sinned, they covered themselves up with loincloth and they with fig leaves, and as soon as God came to walk with them in the garden in the cool of the evening, where was Adam? He was hiding. We've been hiding ever since. We've been hiding the consequences of the flesh. We hide from ourselves the truth about ourselves. We hide from others the truth about ourselves. We don't want to be found out, so we hide that part. You never find Moses covering up from this time on. He learned that lesson from failure. Here's a fourth lesson. First lesson, spiritual ends never achieved by carnal means. Timing is as important as action. Hiding wrong doesn't erase wrong. Fourth lesson, spiritual leadership is God-appointed, not self-assumed. I want to camp on this for just a few minutes because it is so different from the world. Spiritual leadership is God-appointed, not self-assumed. Now, how do you get promoted in the world system? Well, you must present yourself. You must assume an air of confidence. You must work up an incredible resume, right? If you really want a job, you pad that resume with every possible detail you can, just as close to the facts as possible, some of them strained a tad. And then you present yourself in full armor as capable in handling whatever the job may be, from president right down to flunky, preferably president. You are self-assuming in that act. You know, that's not the way it is in the family of God. Moses didn't know that. He had been through the temple of the sun. He had been through the military right up to the top. He was the appointed Pharaoh of the land in just a matter of time. He was the Pharaoh elect. So when it came to killing a Hebrew and redeeming the Hebrews, killing the Egyptians and redeeming the Hebrews, he was ready to do it. He just did it by the flesh. It came natural. Well, in the spiritual life, it has to come supernatural. You know, let me say something else. This is also true of officers in the church. We often feel that because a person is very successful in his business, he will ipso facto be successful as an officer in the church. That's not true. Some men who are eminently successful in the business world are pitiful when it comes to leading a local assembly as an officer. It's not natural leadership that we're looking for. It's spiritual, God-appointed leadership. Don't think if you're a pastor in the making that if you pull the right strings, you'll get to the top and have the church you want. It's never like that. It's often the one you didn't want that God will call you to. I've told you more times than you're ready to believe how Cynthia and I have come to realize that he's made us eat our words. We were going to serve the Lord anywhere but the Dallas area, the New England area, and the California area. We have served the Lord in the Dallas area, the New England area, the California area. And you know, we've loved all three. She said to me recently, I am certainly praying these days that I am not praying against Alaska. I'm saying I'm available for any place, you know, because as soon as I say not Alaska, that's where we're going to go next. You know, it's remarkable how God appoints what he wants, and you have very little say about it. Will you learn that? He learned it from failure. Bless his heart. A.W. Tozer says, a true and safe leader is likely one who has no desire to lead, but is forced into a position of leadership by the inward pressure of the Holy Spirit and by the press of the external situation. Such was David and the Old Testament prophets. I think there was hardly a great leader from Paul to the present day, but was drafted by the Holy Spirit for the task. They didn't look to the stars and say, oh, that's where I plan to go. And they took off running. Often they looked at with chagrin upon the assignment, and God says, look, you're the man. You know how I know Moses learned this lesson? Because 40 years later at the bush, which was burning, remember, and God says, you're the man to deliver the people from Egypt. Moses said, who, me? Me? No. Remember me? I'm the failure. I'm the washout. I'm the dropout. 40 years ago, I couldn't do it. Not me, Lord. You, Moses. Not me. I can't talk. I'll use your mouth. But I can't lead. I'll show you how to lead. I can't speak in public. I'll use your brother. Oh, man. He ran out of excuses. And then he finally says, well, okay. And he became the most magnificent leader Israel ever had. God appointed, not self-assumed. Did he change? Were there any strategic changes in Moses' life? Yeah, I think there were. As a matter of fact, let me point out three right quick. First of all, he developed a servant's attitude. Look at verse 16. Now the priest of Midian had 7 daughters, and they came to draw water and fill the troughs to water their father's flock. Then the shepherds came and drove them away. But Moses stood up and helped them, and he watered their flock. Moses, Prince Charming from Egypt, who has come with a silver spoon in his mouth to the desert, watering the animals. Why? Well, he had eaten the biggest piece of humble pie you can imagine when he ran out of Egypt. He was ready to do anything. See, failure teaches us to have a servant's attitude. Those that don't have it never want to get their hands dirty. They never want to get involved in the messy part of working with people. They always want the polished part, the fun part. But the dirty work behind the scenes, well, let's give that to someone else. Then there's something wrong. God uses a servant's heart. And he's using failure in your life to help cultivate that, my friend. That's all part of the process. I noticed something else that changed in Moses. He was willing to be obscure. Look at verse 21. Moses was willing to dwell with that man. How good that is. Here is a man he had never met. He gave his daughter Zipporah to Moses, and they had a child. And he named the child an unusual name, named him Gershom. It means a sojourner in a foreign land, a stranger. That's what Moses was. He didn't know anybody. He didn't know the ropes. He didn't know where he was going to live. But Jethro said to him, Moses, would you like to live with us? He said, yes, I would. I'll live anywhere. That's being willing to be obscure. You willing to be obscure? A servant's attitude will teach you the importance of being willing to be obscure. In the body of Christ, some people have to be the toes. You know that? Not everybody can be a hand or an eye or an ear. Some people have to be the heel. Some people have to be the toe. Some people have to be a kidney. Boy, that's crummy, isn't it? Willing to be a kidney. Willing to be a liver. Willing to be a stomach. Willing to be an intestine, you know? Never seen. But boy, if you stop functioning, watch out. Moses was willing to be obscure. Didn't have to have the limelight. God's breaking down through your failure your desire to be in the lights. And when he finally breaks you to the point of breaking, who knows? He may put you in the lights like you've never known before, but then it won't matter. You don't care if they ever go out or ever go on. You're just available. There's a third lesson he learned. He learned to rest and rely on God. The last three verses of this chapter are sad verses. They portray a bleak picture. In the course of those many days, the king of Egypt died. The sons of Israel sighed because of their bondage. They cried out, and their cry for help because of their bondage rose up to God. So God heard their groaning. God remembered his covenant with Abraham. God saw the sons of Israel. God took notice of them. You never read Moses did it. You better believe that caravan that traveled from Egypt down into the Midian desert and on across those wastelands didn't bring the message to Moses' ears. You better believe he knew that they were crying out. Moses had a heart for those people. But he rested his case. He relied upon God. He didn't roll up his shepherd's sleeve and run back to Egypt to redeem them. Not him. Boy, he had learned that lesson. He said, when God's ready, God knows, God will work. He relied and rested in God. Just for the ladies for a moment, I received the Nav Log, which is the periodical produced by the Navigators monthly. I was happy to read the writings of Ruth Denler Myers. Ruth was, for a lengthy period of her life, married to Dean Denler. Dean and Jean Denler were twins who played beautiful musical instruments and traveled over the Orient and the Far Eastern Islands. And they presented Jesus Christ through music. But her husband died through a terrible case and bout with cancer. And she was left a widow with little children in the home. I watched her during this time as I knew her husband well, and I prayed often that God would give her grace to live the life of a widow. I was so pleased to read her writing. She has since married Warren Myers, who is a field representative, the Navigators. And she writes this. Listen, it's about failure as a mother. I remember one spring when I was a widow. Both of my children were facing excruciating problems. I would lie in bed at night harassed by anxiety. Even though I prayed about their needs, my worries kept returning. Why was I so anxious? At the time, now listen, at the time I was afraid of failure as a mother. My number one responsibility. I didn't even have their father to share the blame with. I was seeking identity in successful performance. Does that ring a bell with any of you? I was seeking security in success. When I realized that, I prayed with new insight. I said, Lord, I confess my persistent anxiety and reliance on successful performance and the approval of others. Thank you for forgiveness. The children are dedicated to you. If their difficult experiences will glorify you, even if I seem to be a failure as a mother, you have my permission. I love that. Even if it means my appearing to the world around me as a failure, you have my permission. My gnawing anxiety evaporated. Do you know who erects a standard that is unrealistic? You do. You do. I do. Our Father doesn't. Our Father says he knows our frame. He remembers that we are dust. That's all. But we come into a Christian life hearing testimonies of glowing success, consistent victory, and then we tube out 1 week and we think, oh, God, I'm finished. No, friend, you're just starting. Our problem is that we have failed. Our problem is that we haven't failed enough. Problem is not that we are defeated at times. The problem is that we're not defeated enough so that we learn. As Andre Crouch put it, I've had many tears and sorrows, questions for tomorrow. There have been times I didn't know right from wrong. But in every situation, God gave blessed consolation that my trials come to only make me strong. I've been to lots of places. I've seen lots of faces. There have been times I felt so all alone. But in those lonely hours, yes, those precious lonely hours, Jesus let me know that I was His own. I thank God for the mountains, and I thank Him for the valleys. I thank Him for the storms He brought me through. For if I'd never had a problem, I wouldn't know that He could solve them. I'd never know what faith in God could do. Through it all, that's the process. Through it all, I've learned to trust in Jesus. I've learned to trust in God. Through it all, I've learned to lean upon His Word. Through it all. I'm grateful tonight, as I close, that all of us qualify in one area, which makes us all on the same level. We qualify as failures. Okay? That takes all the pressure off. Will you quit trying to prove something to somebody? Will you just be you and plead the Spirit of God to use you, dark side and all? You'll be amazed how that takes the pressure off. You'll be amazed. Now we come to the one who loves us just like we are, don't we? Let's bow together. Well, friend, I don't know a lot of you that are here, but I had a young man come up to me just after the other service a few minutes ago, and he said, Pastor Swindoll, you don't know me, but I felt like you knew me better than anybody in this place because you really talked to me. I have felt that I had to achieve to be loved, and I've learned tonight I don't. Just in the quietness of this moment, thank the Lord for loving and accepting you just like you are, warts and all, cracks and all, failure, incompetence, defeat. Lord, you are the one that never stops working in lives. You've written a book that will never end. You've given a power that will never reach its limit. You provided the Son of God, who seems never to stop speaking when hurting hearts are near to hear. I pray for those who may hear this message in some lonely spot, that you would step in and do a work of salvation and or filling, so that we can do more than cope. We can handle life.
You've been listening to Insight for Living and a message from Chuck Swindoll titled Lessons Learned from Failure. It's just one of 20 studies in Chuck's biography on Moses, and there is much more wisdom to come. Let me give you a quick preview of the practical messages that are ahead in this hallmark study, which Chuck delivered several decades ago. In the coming days, Chuck will present a sermon called Burning Bushes and Second Chances, And you'll also have another helpful message called Why Leaders Crack Up. These are all coming up on Insight for Living. And you might not know, but Chuck has also written a full-length book about Moses. It's nearly 400 pages in length, and it's written in an engaging style that you've come to expect from Chuck. This engaging biography would make a wonderful gift for a friend. You can find details on Chuck's biography about Moses at ifl.org.au. I'm Clayton Bjellin. Join us when Chuck Swindoll continues his biography on Moses, a man of selfless dedication, Monday on Insight for Living.